Hello and welcome to CodeBytes, sponsored by Search 5.0. I'm your host, Stephen Turkington. For CodeBytes, we're passionate about creating an accessible pool of mentors. And today's guest is that of Martin McCartan. Martin's currently the Director of Engineering for SongTrader and someone who's led successful engineering teams across both software companies and also consultancy. We get the chance to delve into his journey, successes, and we also touch upon a couple of key topics that currently hinders the technology market. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Martin, thank you for joining us on CodeBytes.
Thanks, Stephen. It's a pleasure to be here and good to see you again.
Martin, I would love for you to kick things off and just give us an overview of your experience today.
Kind of all started for me just about 30 years ago or so when I graduated from Queen's pure mathematics degree. And after that, I kind of took a year out just to do a couple of things and decide what I wanted to do next. And then I went back to Queen's and did a conversion course. And then through that, I managed to get my first real job opening with a company called Logicom in Belfast, who were based on the Lisburn Road. And it was kind of run by a guy called Bro McFerrin, who's been very well known in IT circles within Northern Ireland. So I got in there on like a year's trainee program, and I was working in a very small software development department, as it was then. It was only about six of us, but Logicom was mostly dealt in hardware. So there's a huge hardware department, and also training and learning for companies, because they had contracts with Microsoft and Wine Computers particularly. But anyway, we were in there. It was great for me. Very small, wee, tight-knit group. A lot of different projects to work on, mostly in the local public and private sector. And then from there, after a year, I moved on to a company called CAM Systems, who I think are still going in a different guise maybe. And they were based on the Lower Ravenhill Road at the time. So I joined there as a programmer, and we worked on access control systems. I was a VB programmer back in those days. A bigger company, slightly larger software development side of things, but really interesting project that I worked on was creating a new access control system for Hong Kong International Airport. And this was in the mid-90s, in anticipation of Hong Kong being handed over from the UK over to China by the end of the century. So that was a really interesting program, and some really good guys, really tight-knit group, really sociable group, probably at the right age, you know, kind of mid-20s in those days. So we worked hard and kind of played hard, but it was good. It was good grounding. And then from there, I moved to a company called Parity Solutions, who were based out in a technology park in Antrim. Again, as a programmer analyst, joining a team that were doing mostly bespoke development at the time for a lot of public and private sector companies again, but on a broader scale within the UK. So I've got to work in different parts of the UK as well through that contract. And again, a lot kind of broadened my horizons in terms of the technologies that I worked in. So I started off in VB and moved into things like Infermix and C Sharp and different things like that back in the day. So again, really interesting, good ground, and learned from a lot of good people, had a lot of good mentors from a technical standpoint, actually, back in those days, really good guidance. And then around after a couple of years in the late 90s, it was just kind of the kickoff of the big FDIs coming into Belfast and Northern Ireland generally. And I got wind of Allstate starting up. And again, Bro, who I mentioned earlier, he was involved in that. So I managed to blag an interview, and I got a job with those guys as a senior programmer analyst at the time. And we were one of the first intake in Belfast. My actual company number was number 40 or 040. So it was great. Joined a team of about six. After 3 weeks of basic training, we get sent to Chicago for 3 months, and it was a great time. It was over the summer. It was June, July, and August. And that helped build a really good, strong rapport amongst our team. We went over and transitioned some work off of US contractors at the time, brought it back home, and then kind of ran with that for a while. And then just through that, after about 12 months, I moved into a team lead role, came up on my team, and I applied and got it. And that kind of got me into the management side of things, which was something that I I kind of wanted to do after a few years of working in the industry. And then from there, I kind of went from area manager, senior manager, right through for the next 18 years or so, and more globally with a lot of teams, not just here in Northern Ireland, in Belfast and Derry, but in Chicago, in India. Also offered me the opportunity to go and live in Chicago for a while, which I'll talk to you about later. Massive experience, huge chunk of my career to date. But then after a period, I was at a certain age and things were kind of tailing off a wee bit. And I decided, you know, I was at a crossroads, what I want to do with my career. So I got approached by Deloitte. They wanted to set up a nearshore bespoke delivery service in Belfast. Got involved, got in there, got involved with those guys, stayed about a year. Didn't really work out how I was expecting it to, but again, you know, some of these things happen. That's how careers go. There's peaks and troughs. After that, moved to a company called ShopKeep, who were based out of New York, who had started up in Belfast just a couple of years earlier. Great experience, slightly different kind of company, very product focused, very agile. Learned a lot in there, working on teams in Belfast and in the US. And then after a couple of years, the company got acquired by a bigger fish called Lightspeed. Stayed there for about 6 months and then decided it wasn't for me anymore. Things had kind of changed. And I moved on to a local company as head of engineering called Analytics Engines, who were launching their own product at the time and wanted me involved to help them go to market on that, which again was a great experience and working in a smaller, very local company as well, and trying to bring a product to market, which anyone will understand has its difficulties and its hurdles. Again, all good experience. But after about a year or so, I decided to move on, and I've ended up where I am now in SongTrader as director of engineering, heading up their customer experience applications, which I'll talk a wee bit more about in depth later on. But really interesting company for somebody like myself who's interested in tech and in music side. You know, it probably couldn't be better.
Martin, obviously, you've been able to get good varied exposure in both Indigenous businesses, global businesses, FDIs, and obviously being one of the early people in the door with Allstate, and obviously we've seen how massive, you know, they've grown as well. So if you were to reflect and look back in your career, Martin, what would have been your biggest success or even a defining moment for you?
Biggest success, and one that I talk about quite a lot, particularly in recent years when going for job interviews, is something that happened around 13 or 14 years ago, and I touched on it earlier. Through my time in Allstate, I got the opportunity to kind of go and live and work in the US for a while. And that how that came about was that the area that I was working in at the time, we were called product technology, and we looked after their basically property and casualty lines software, which Allstate in those days ran a very kind of agency model. So the software that they use to sell like your car insurance, your home insurance, your boat insurance, your trail caravan insurance, all that good stuff. All the stuff that you're probably familiar with yourself. We supported that system. And it probably at the time, it accounted for about 85% of their total revenue. So it was quite a critical system at the time, but it was fairly antiquated. It was started out in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was an old green screen application built off on the mainframe. Very fast, very quick, but obviously not very modern, even by the 2000 standards. So they underwent the program to rewrite it in Java. And unfortunately, at the time, they decided to go down a different route and not use folks in Northern Ireland. They used a lot of their in-house augmented by contractors out of India. Cut a long story short, obviously, we had about 120 of our people in Belfast who were working on the old green screen. We weren't really involved in any of this work. So myself and my boss at the time kind of decided, you know, well, what are we going to do here? We need to try to do something fairly drastic to get involved in this and at least have a footprint of involvement moving forward. So we kind of went out on a limb and we come up with an idea to try to take some of that work and prove. So we kind of did some, I wouldn't call them proof of concepts, but smaller kind of chunk projects just to kind of prove ourselves with small teams. And through that, we had to develop our own in-house reskilling program as well, because our guys didn't know Java at the time. So we had to bring in some external people to reskill them and then dump them straight on this stuff. So it was fairly fast-paced, quick moving. But we kind of proved ourselves out, but there was a lot of politics going on at the time. So ultimately what they said was, look, you guys will suffer because you don't have an on-site presence. And the contractors are very good at putting their own people on site, obviously, and kind of, you know, getting involved in a lot of the discussions in the meetings. So we concocted an idea that I would go over there and spend a year or so over there. And I did. I moved over there, created a lot of good relationships, got involved with a lot of the decision makers, and at the same time building up teams back here in Belfast and Northern Ireland, and feeding some of that work through to the guys, and then kind of acting as an overall kind of delivery lead. And then through my contacts over there, I get in with one of the directors who was overseeing the smaller lines of insurance around kind of the boats and the mobile homes and things like that, because a lot of the auto and the property work was being done by other teams. So we were able to get involved there. She essentially brought me into her organization and set me up as a global delivery role in there, and wanted to use at least 50% of our guys for all of the work that they plan to do to close this program out. So I end up spending the guts of 4 years back and forward over there to try to close this program out. And we did that rather successfully. I think we missed the deadline by about a month or two, which, considering that it had been going on for probably nearly 10 years before that, is not actually too bad. And I think the overall cost was somewhere between $75 and $80 million in terms of delivery. So again, massive experience, hugely successful, got a lot of plaudits off the back of that, obviously. But even just having that experience of being able to move to a different country, work over there, and then becoming more global minded in terms of my outlook and my responsibility was a massive game changer for me.
As well, Martin, of your time. And it's something which we do here, where obviously we look at foreign direct investment coming in to Northern Ireland, but then a challenge could be you're obviously dealing with different cultures, which, you know, perhaps you had experience at your time there. I mean, how important is it for that face-to-face time, Martin, to build relationships? I mean, obviously it worked out very well in your situation.
At the time, it was critical. It was crucial. We couldn't have done it really without me going on site, so to speak, because I'm going to show my age here. But even going back then, you know, 13, 14 years ago, there wasn't platforms like Zoom or like Teams and things like that where you could, you know, that were readily enough available that you could just kind of set up these kind of calls. But even differently to that, you know yourself, you know, as well as these online VC calls are, there's nothing like actually meeting face to face and getting to know people that way, and actually being able to do that and live and breathe amongst the folks over there, but also socialize with them as well and become not just colleagues but friends with a lot of people, which I was lucky enough to do, and I'm still friendly with a lot of them to this day, not just within that working environment but even outside of that. You know, in the area where I lived, I got to know a lot of people through different contacts and connections, and I still be friendly with them. But, you know, just to your point, being there and kind of getting involved in a lot of the discussions, even if it's just, you know, people used to call it water cooler discussions, or, you know, discussions in the corridor or over lunch in the cafeteria, things like that, you know, was vital. I feel it was vital to me being successful, but ultimately the team's been successful back home as well, and us being able to grow that group and to take on the ownership and responsibility for that work. So, yeah, I think even now to this day, it's kind of critical to the work that we do, even though the technology platforms are a lot more open now and a lot more readily available, but there's nothing like that. You can't equate it to these kind of virtual conversations.
Yeah, I agree, Martin. It's an absolute core mechanism. Martin, I want to move on to the part of mentorship. And you spoke about it briefly there at the start, and it's something which we're very passionate about. In fact, why the podcast had started. What does mentorship mean for you, Martin? And how important is one for one's career?
Well, for me personally, and again, I can only speak from experience, is that it's been kind of, it's been crucial to me in order to progress. And what I mean by that is having a good mentor or several mentors allows you to speak to in many ways an independent third party about a lot of the problems that you're facing. So as you can imagine, in a lot of cases, being able to sit down and speak to folks that aren't directly involved but understand some of the pains and the work that you're actually doing, and be able to offer a different insight into that. I always kind of look at it from my experiences, that the mentors that I have kind of shaped me and kind of, you know, sculpted a lot of the rough edges off of me at the time, because I like anyone, nobody's perfect, and you know, we all kind of acquire these different experiences and bad habits along the way. And I think they were, thinking back in the main mentors that I had, they were critical to doing that and giving me some good career advice and guidance, and just generally how to handle certain situations. And more importantly, when you talked about relationships and being on site, individuals, you know, individual characters, and looking at those kind of character traits and how to best deal with those and how to make an impression and how to influence a conversation from that perspective. Because that was one of the biggest challenges that I found actually moving over there, that I said to people at the time is, you know, how do I influence these folks? And there's a number of different ways that you can actually do that, and being there and gaining their confidence, and obviously proving that you're capable is a big one as well. But being able to speak from a sense of confidence and authority, I think, goes a long way too. And having mentors were able to actually shape me and actually help me develop that.
Brilliant. And unfortunately, still to this day, Martin, you know, there's people out there that don't have mentors, you know, they don't have that go-to, you know, perhaps within their career. What advice would you have for them, Martin, to reach out to somebody?
Things have maybe changed a bit, but I think it's critical to, if you want to progress in your career, I think it's crucial. It's very, very difficult to do it on your own. I have rarely seen anyone who's been able to progress on their own just through their own talents. You can be as talented in certain areas as possible, but there's also going to be other areas of your character, and particularly in terms of being a leader, that you do need guidance on, that you do need help. You know, people skills are a massive part of our role. I know we all work in technology, and you know, the technology side of it's great, but the people skills side is, in some ways, it's a lot more difficult. I've kind of seen it, the importance of it diminish in recent years with a lot of smaller scale startups and stuff, where the onus hasn't really been on that. And it's only until they try to make that transition into becoming a more mature organization that I feel that they find that they struggle with that. You know, I see a lot of folks, and again, this is no disrespect to anyone, but a lot of really, really good technical people being promoted into people management roles, or having to do that in a hybrid kind of way. I've seen them struggle. I've seen people struggle. And that's not to say I haven't struggled at times in my career and continue to do, but I've seen them struggle, and struggle badly, because they tend to navigate, like anyone would, towards what they are actually comfortable with. And that'll be the technical side, and the people management side gets dismissed, or the soft skills side gets dismissed. And, you know, in any leadership role, you need that. And in fact, you probably leverage that more than you do your kind of your technical nous or understanding. So to me, it's been vitally important. I've been very lucky to have some really good mentors along the way. I've been lucky to get involved in a lot of good development programs over the years as well, particularly through companies like Allstate and other companies subsequently as well, like Deloitte and ShopKeep and places like that. You know, we're brilliant at introducing that kind of, and recognizing some of the requirements in relation to that. So yeah, I think, you know, that's a vital part of the role going forward. And that's the advice I would give most people, is that don't dismiss that side of it. It is important. Put the time and the effort and get the note and get a mentor, because they will help you actually develop that.
Yeah, absolutely. Martin, thank you for that. And regarding, I suppose, the current industry, Martin, and how we sit, what do you feel some of the biggest challenges that we're facing?
The first one I probably talk about is just one that you maybe understand, is the challenges that we have with recruitment. And, you know, there has been a lot of growth in the last few years in terms of FDIs. I've been lucky enough, I've been around long enough in the industry where back in the days when I started out, there was very few FDIs, if any. And I've seen them kind of gradually come in since the peace agreements of the late 90s. And, you know, obviously we've prospered from that as a country. And what I've seen in recent times is that's becoming more of a challenge. You know, I've listened to other podcasts that you've done as well, and people quite rightly have reflected on this from the point of view of having to address things like skill shortages. But we've had skill shortages now for nigh on 20 years. And, you know, I listened to a lot of the folks, what they've tried to do, and I've been involved in this myself, you know, in trying to build these programs out in conjunction with the universities or with Belfast Met or whoever it is, to try to bridge folks into the IT industry. And that is great. And that is something that really should continue. But I also see an area where folks that are actually working in IT now, our expectations have got really, really high. And my fear is that we are very much at getting close to pricing ourselves out of the market because our expectations are so high. You know, foreign direct investments want to come into Northern Ireland because we have a really highly skilled, highly educated workforce. But it is a small pool of people. And obviously those things I've mentioned will try to expand on that. But at the same time, it's because, you know, where we kind of sit in the overall global economic scale. And whilst it's been great that the kind of the remuneration packages that are coming through in recent years have helped to kind of grow us and grow the industry, my fear would be that our expectations are getting too high. And when it comes to actually recruitment and recruiting for some of these roles, it's becoming more and more difficult, because people are becoming really, really picky and really setting the bar extremely high. And that's driving up, expectations across the board. And, you know, with the onset of COVID in the last few years, I think companies like my own have become more global minded in terms of where their footprint should be. And in many cases, they don't necessarily see the need to set up technical hubs in parts of Northern Ireland anymore. It's great that we have companies still doing that, and it's great that they still invest. But with the current economic climate, I don't know how long that can persist. And, you know, they are looking at other areas of Europe. They are looking at other areas of Eastern Europe, beyond that, in Asia, et cetera. And if we aren't positioned competitively against that, we will essentially price ourselves out of the market, and they will overlook us at some stage. And that would be my fear. I think the other thing in terms of skills gap that I touched upon earlier is that something that's kind of close to my heart is that, you know, we've built programs to bring people into employment in the IT industry by reskilling, which is fantastic. We've done a lot of work as an industry in terms of addressing problems within diversity and inclusion, which I think is tremendous as well. And, you know, things are a lot more diverse than they were when I started out 30 years ago. And that's a reflection on society, and I think that's great. And in many ways, the IT industry in Northern Ireland has been at the forefront of driving that. And, you know, we're doing a lot more work with schools as an industry in terms of bringing through females to get them more interested in STEM subjects and get them potentially a pathway through to working in the IT industry. And also ethnic minorities too. But I think there's another area which is mentioned is kind of close to my heart, is that I am the father of two sons who are ASD. And this year, my eldest son, he attended Belfast Met once a week as part of his just general curriculum to get them some exposure to a different location and working in technology. And he did an IT kind of year this year. And when I look at people like him who have shown a bit of an interest in this, and I look at a lot of other folks, and I've worked with companies like Deloitte who have worked with social responsibility companies like Autism Works in the UK and places like that. It's like there has to be a pathway through for these people to get them involved in an industry like our own. In many ways, they're an untapped resource. These are folks that they may not have the same social skills that a lot of us have, but in terms of logical thinking, in terms of their application, they would lend themselves, their kind of thought process would lend itself very well to the type of work that we do. And I just feel that there is an area there which, yes, through the education authority, my son managed to have that one day a week in there. But I'm kind of thinking beyond that is, you know, once he finishes school in a few years, where is his path into employment? What's he going to go on to do? It's not always that difficult to get them in the university and things like that. So what can the industry like ours do to kind of give back to those people? And I think there is opportunities there to bring folks in, particularly when we talk about skill shortages.
Yeah, absolutely. Martin, and you're right, you know, we've made good progress and still continuing to make good progress and a lot of different initiatives to tap into the talent resources, but the neurodiverse, you know, talent is still fairly untapped, Martin, but yet, you know, a huge amount of the population are neurodiverse in either form. And I think it's important because it's something which isn't spoken about enough still, I feel it, and you probably agree. I mean, would you have an idea why that would be?
I think we still live with very antiquated, old kind of social values. It's in many ways, it's still considered to be a bit of a taboo subject. You know, I can only, again, speak from experience. You know, ever since my first son was diagnosed, and between me and my wife, we've always, well, particularly my wife has always kind of gone out of her way to try to educate herself in this. And, you know, all my learning comes from what she's learned. And we always took the view that we're not going to hide this. We're going to talk about it and we're going to share it. We're going to make people more aware of what's going on. And, you know, I remember, you know, back a few years, family, friends, even when I started talking about it, we'd want to shut the conversation down. And I was quite persistent in saying, no, I'm quite open about it, that he is what he is. And now I have a second son who's more severe as well, who is nonverbal, doesn't talk. He's 6 years old. And you know, when you're out doing shopping or you're out in company or when you go on holidays and stuff, it can be difficult for him because they find it difficult to adjust to those social settings. But the way that their brains work logically and how they think is so clear, and in many ways it's kind of several steps ahead of the rest of us, and they aren't kind of swayed by a lot of the nonsense and the influence that goes on around us in society. And I think that's a great thing. I think it's an area that I'm not saying this would be the solution, but I think it's an untapped area, and it's something that could be looked into a bit more in terms of maybe trying to fill some of those skill shortages that we have within the industry. And, you know, maybe selfishly from my point of view, I'm looking at it from, say, you know, I'm really keen to make sure that they have the best opportunity moving forward as to when they finish school and that they have a path to employment, whatever that may be. Hopefully it would be in something like IT, maybe it's in something else, I don't know. But, you know, again, why not? You know, I'm always open to trying something at least once. And, you know, as a society, I would encourage that. And I think that, you know, why don't we try and do a wee bit more in this area? And why don't we partner with third level education and different businesses within our organization, see what we can do? We have a lot of big brains here, right? I like to think we could come up with some sort of solution.
And it's great to hear that your eldest is getting obviously that one day a week, but you're right. I think it's something which as a collective group, you know, we need to share about more and make more accessible routes. And obviously, you know, you're coming in from a parent angle where, you know, you care about your son's career and the opportunities which they will have, you know, going forward. So definitely a lot more, Martin, to be done in that area. I totally agree. And that probably moves on to the next subject, which is talent. How would you identify good talent in today's market?
I really have like two things that I look for in people. And, you know, whether it be in the work in the industry that we work in, or even I coach football and things like that, there are two words that I look for, and it's the two A's, attitude and application, right? Person has to have the right attitude, has to have a kind of forward-thinking attitude, that they want to progress, that they are curious, that they want to get involved in things, that they want to solve problems and issues, that they're happy working in a team environment, you know, because mostly in IT now, we are formed around teams, which I think is very important and vital. You know, gone are the days where people are locked in their room on their own and just kind of playing about. I think it's very, very important that we work in teams and we recognize each other and the contributions that we can do as a team. And then again, just how they apply themselves, you know, do they have the right attitude or do they have the right kind of perspective, rather than attitude. I think we talk about mentors, and I think of a mentor that I had in the US. He was my boss at the time, and we got really close. We used to sit desk to desk, and she used to have a whiteboard, and she used to have all her like drawings and diagrams and stuff, but she used to have the saying at the top of it. And it never rubbed off. She never rubbed it off. And I was always curious. She rubbed everything else off and whatever, never rubbed this in. It said brain engaged. And I asked her one day, I said, what does that mean? You know, obviously not knowing what brain engaged means, but she said to me, that's my expectation of myself and people when they come to work every day. Yes, we can come in and enjoy it and have a laugh, et cetera, but when we're focused on something, let's make sure that our brains are engaged just for that period of work, right? Just for that period of work. It's not that it's a complete downer. And I think that is a very important thing, particularly in the current climate, you know, when there are a lot of distractions and we do a lot of remote working, is that, you know, we set up meetings to solution and talk through different different problems that we have, is that as long as you come in and during that period that your brain is engaged, and somebody has that perspective and that attitude, I think that's great. And then we can have all the crack and the fun after that as well. So yeah, they're the two main things that I look for in a person. And, you know, the other thing as well is that I had another really good mentor in the US who was a senior vice president. And I actually went out and sought him myself through an executive leadership program. And one of the big pieces of advice he gave to me in terms of, you know, progress is, and again, something that I would look for in individuals, is that, you know, you're constantly trying to sell yourself. You know, you are trying to sell yourself as a person to other people that you work with so that they want to continue working with you, or they want to use you for another big project or big piece of work. And one of the things he said to me was, think of yourself as a consultancy of one. Think of yourself as Martin McCartan Inc. Right. If you approach things from the view of being a consultant, consultants work from job to job. Right. They're hungry. They have to sell themselves. They have to show that they're actually capable and competent. And I think, you know, just kind of possessing that attitude. And it's not something that I always have, but I've had it at elements of time within my career since I got that piece of advice, is, you know, just think about, you know, you're working with people, particularly when you're trying to influence other people that you're working with outside of maybe your current organization, is just think in those terms. Again, when we talk about influence, it's a good way of actually achieving them.
Spin and outlook as well, Martin, and it's your whole personal brand, you know, as well at the same time, and how you want to be perceived and what you want to contribute, you know, at the same time, and how important it is, Martin. So really enjoy that. Martin, probably to wrap things up, what advice would you have to any aspiring technologist in today's market?
Well, the obvious thing is, you know, gen up as much as possible on the technology side of things, right? And one of the things that I was lucky to do through my career in the early part of my career, as I mentioned earlier, was I was managed to get broad experience on multiple different languages, multiple different platforms, et cetera, et cetera. And so what I would tend to say to folks is that there's a tendency now to kind of pigeonhole yourself. You can do that at a point in your career, but don't do it too early. You know, try and get as rounded as possible. But I think the key thing of a piece of advice I would like to give to any young person coming through into the industry is something that I shared with a kind of round table a few years ago in a company I was working with when we were onboarding a lot of graduates in the company, myself and some other leaders. And we had them in a round table in a room, and we're kind of talking through and, you know, responding to questions like that. And some of my colleagues and all were saying, you know, learn this technology, go to these meetups, you know, get involved in hackathons, and all brilliant stuff. Absolutely, you know, reflective of the modern state of our industry today, and couldn't agree more. But when it came to me, they asked me the question, and my response was simply, get yourself a hobby. Get yourself a hobby. Learn to switch off. One of the things that I've learned in my 30 years in this industry is that you will quickly burn yourself out. There is a tendency to fall into a trap that, you know, work counts for everything. And yes, work is important. Of course it is. And it's what pays our wages and pays our bills and all the rest of it. And if you can work for a company that invests in you as an individual and, you know, is interested in you and provides you with a career path and all the rest of it, great. But the bottom line is that it is work and you need that balance outside of work. And I said, learn to switch off in the evenings. When you finish your work, learn to switch off, walk away from your computer, go and find something to do, whether if you play sports or you're into things like triathlons like yourself. You know, I coach football now. I used to play a lot of football when I was younger, which was great. You know, learn a musical instrument, go for a walk, do anything, right? But learn to switch off and walk away, because it is a very short career as well, but you also have a life. It's a very short life too, and you want to enjoy it as much as possible. And there is a tendency in this industry that you can get sucked in. I've been there. I have the scars, so to speak, is that it does suck you in, and it's very, very difficult to get out of that trap. And so that, and alongside the other piece of advice I tend to give people is, like, don't take yourself too seriously, because really you're not that important. I'm not that important, right? Work is important, but you're not that important as an individual. Those kind of two pieces of advice I try to live by as much as possible now is to be able to have that switch off. And I think it's, if you can get into that kind of mindset as a young person, but have the right attitude, have the right application while you're in work, I think all those things lead to making a very rounded person.
Love that, Martin. Love that. And it's so true as well. Finding a hobby is one we haven't had before on Cobites, but I think it's absolutely so key. And in fact, I had a conversation just this morning with somebody who had started their first marathon, and they're a technologist. And the reason why they left their last job was through burnout, because they didn't have that go-to. Whereas in actual fact now, they've been able to disconnect, build a routine, and they're actually having optimal performance in work. And when you mention your old boss about brain engaged, you know, that certainly creates that discipline and that area. So I think that's absolutely vital, Martin. So thank you for sharing that. Martin, this has been a really good conversation. If people want to find out a bit more about yourself or Song Trader, how could they go about doing this?
Yep. So Song Trader, go to songtrader.com. It's our website. It's got all the information you need in relation to who we are and what we do. I will say the website is about to go through a revamp. One of my teams is going to start working on that very soon. But all the information is out there on our different offerings, our platforms, our services, etc. You can even go in, if you feel the need, you can win licensed music for yourself, or you can enter as a guest and actually play about with some of our software. Particularly the area that I work in the customer facing software. So please do go in and have a look and see what we're all about. And if you want to talk to me more about Song Trader or just things in general in terms of mentorship or leadership or anything that I can help with, you'll get me on LinkedIn. Like everything else, I'm more than happy to speak to anyone that wants to go out of their way to contact me, because I said to you before, working in this industry so long, you kind of think that you've built up a lot of knowledge, and it's only fair to kind of share that around for better or for worse. So I'm always open to speaking to people.
Brilliant, Martin. I'll be able to plug that as well for our audience. And don't worry, nobody's going to be judging the state of your current website before the revamp and the reboot too.
It's actually not too bad. But the powers that be want it changed. So there you go. Who am I to argue with folks that are more knowledgeable about this stuff than I am?
Martin, thank you very much for your time.
Not at all, Stephen. Thank you. Pleasure. All the best.